Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Native on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Brianna Kurtz. Each week, this show features a U.S. or international location and uses food and drink as a gateway to explore and celebrate the cuisine and culture of a destination. This week, I am happy to welcome Ralph Cattell, executive chef and owner of Trestle on 10th and Rocket Pig here in New York City. Ralph is a native of Switzerland, and that is where our conversation today will mainly focus on. So hi, Ralph. Thank you for joining me at Heritage today.
Hey, Brianna. Thank you for having me.
All right, so I just want to start by kind of getting a general lay of the land and ask you if you could kind of paint a picture for me and describe Switzerland's topography, its climate, and then additionally how that influences the cuisine.
Well, Switzerland is divided in three different areas the way I see it. It's a flatland, the foothills, the mountains. Clearly, in flatlands, the climate is a little milder. Hills gets a little colder, and in the mountains, it's mountain weather. It gets very cold at night, very hot in the summer. And culinarily, the flatlanders tend to eat also lighter, you know, and the mountain people, very hearty food.
And is there much diversity regionally from the north, the south, the east to the west, or is it really broken up by those kind of lowland and upland factors?
It is more like lowland, mountainous. And of course, the French-speaking people are influenced by their French cuisine. Up in Zurich, they're more Germanic. And in Italian part, it's the most pronounced, where it's very Italian, risotto, pastas, rice, potatoes and stuff like that.
And as far as, let's talk a little bit about the history, if you could kind of lay it out for me, all those influences of the Italian, the French, the German, and going back and looking at the history of that, and then how that leads us to where we are today in the kind of makeup of the country.
Switzerland is a federation, so it's cobbled together by very mini states of sometimes not more than 100,000 people. And it started in the center of Switzerland, Urspitzen, Nidwald, and then more and more of those little states joined. The last ones were the French-speaking part, and that also shows culinarily.
And percentage-wise, is it mostly Germanic, like in the north and in the east, or is it more French-speaking and more influence there?
It's pretty much in thirds, a third German-speaking, a third French, and the remaining one-third is divided half-half between the Graubünden, where they speak Romansh, which is like a pig Latin, and the Italian-speaking part.
Wow. And so if I were to visit Switzerland, or someone is visiting themselves, and I wanted to eat a normal, a very traditional Swiss, like have a Swiss day where I'm eating a traditional breakfast, a traditional lunch, and a traditional dinner, what would I be eating in each of those meals?
You see the people, they wake up with espresso and yogurt and then run off to work. The farms, it's quite different. I can tell you a small story. When I was 10, 12 years old, I visited a relative, and he had a big farm. We got up at 4:30 in the morning, started off with eating bread, jams, and cold cuts. Then at started our chores, milking the cows, came back at 7 o'clock, had a hearty breakfast of rösti, bacon, eggs, and stuff. Out on the field, 9 o'clock, it was another meal. 12 o'clock, it was 12, 1 o'clock, another lunch. 3 o'clock, more to eat, work in the fields, going back, milking the cows, cleaning out the barn, and then at 8 o'clock we would have dinner, roasts, potatoes, mushrooms, all sorts of stuff, and at 10 o'clock we would fall into bed and start all over again. I did that for 4 weeks. I don't know how they do it, but that's an uber-traditional day a meal. Not many people eat that way anymore. If you were to visit now, just regular fare, you know, lots of dairy, some sausages in the morning, light lunch, and then dinner.
Are there like pastries in the morning or bread?
Oh, yeah, like soft pastries. But they're not sweet. We don't eat much
more
sweet
savory
stuff. Yeah, savory stuff.
Interesting. And when you, how often do you get to go back and visit?
Well, sadly enough, not more than once a year, every 2 years.
And when you get there, what is the first thing that you're either looking forward to or the first thing you eat off the plane?
Very pedestrian. I like my servola when I get home, which is a pork and beef sausage. I eat it cold with mustard and a hearty roll. And that's sort of like my coming back home.
That sounds delicious. Well, let's talk a little bit more about some of the cultural sides. What is the most important Swiss food holiday?
We don't really have food holidays.
Well, if it's every holiday. Is it Christmas that has the biggest meal, or is it Easter, or?
Neither. Both of them. Every single holiday in my family was a big day, like we weren't very rich, so our daily fare was very simple. And having an Easter coming up or Mother's Day was always an occasion to either my mother cook up or we would go to a restaurant. On Christmas, well, the one thing that we actually do eat is on Easter is an Easter rice cake. That's one of the traditional things. Or on the 6th of December, which is San Nicholas Day, what a thing that we call Grittibanz. It's a bread man with a pipe and such things. And
where does that come from?
I'm not entirely sure. I think to Christmas and St. Nicholas Day is different than it is here in the States. Christmas is brought by an angel. Okay, that's on the 24th, 25th of December. On the 6th of December is St. Nicholas Day, Sommi Klaus Day. And that's the day of reckoning when you're a kid. Okay. That's your parents send your good deeds and bad deeds to a man. He dresses up like a Santa Claus and he comes by and reads you the riot and then leaves goods, nuts,
treats
and stuff with you, and also Grittibanz.
And besides that, are there any other unique customs surrounding food or festivals? Or maybe what's your like favorite season when you're there?
I try not to go home in the winter since the weather is, you know, a little shifty. The one big thing that goes on throughout the whole winter is Metzgete. Every family, if you have a farmhouse, you slaughter your pig and you process it, you make everything out of it. Then the following days after Metzgete, you eat all the things that you cannot, or used to be, cannot cure or freeze, or you sort of blood sausage, liver sausage, sausages, ears, and then the bacon, and then it goes on.
And I do want to talk more about that in the second half, but still focusing on Switzerland, is there a national dish or something that you can only find in Switzerland?
You know what? I wanted to say no, and then I stopped putting on my thinking cap, and I came up with a whole slew of things. Of course, we have Rösti, we have fondue, raclette, cheeses, and chocolate, all the more mundane things. But if you go to the eastern part of Switzerland, we have Bündnergersche soup, which is very traditional, barley soup. We have bread soup, flour soups, Kapunz, which is a Swiss chard wrapped dough with filling. What else? Kishes, tarts. I said Rösti, of course.
Tell me a little bit more about the Rösti.
Once again, it's an old byproduct of farms. Every farm wife, at that time, maybe now it's farm man. They will cook potatoes and just keep it in a larder for whenever the men of the house or the women of the house will come back from the fields hungry. It was an easy meal to dish up. So peel the potatoes. They're cold, several days old perhaps, because you cannot use fresh potatoes for this particular style of Rösti. Just peel them up, grate them, pop them in a pan, and 15 minutes later with an egg, you have really a meal that keeps you going for another 6 hours.
And besides that, going back to the seasons, when, you're a chef, are there things that you grew up with there that you just wish you could get here, or that's not quite the same, or products there that you you miss?
Well, for one, cervelat, which is very pedestrian sort of food. When you grow up as a kid, when you go hiking, you know, carve it up and hold it over fire. And I miss many of the wines, the beers, but more and more you get it over here, mm-hmm. although Switzerland has not much interest to export anything since we consume most of the stuff ourselves. And unless it's heavily subsidized by the government, it's also too expensive to get over here.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I did want to talk about just moving away from the food a little bit and talking about the beverages. So what are you drinking with all this amazing Swiss food when you're in Switzerland? You mentioned the wines, you mentioned the beers, but maybe you could tell me a little bit more about the style of wine, the styles of beers.
The beers, like German beers, they're very hoppy. Okay, so they're a little bitter. They can be served warm, so when you go in a country restaurant, they ask you if you want to have your beer chilled or if you want to have it room temperature.
Do they bring ice or is it chilled?
Okay. It's chilled. It comes out of the fridge, yeah. I grew up when we drank Coca-Cola once a month without ice, maybe with some lemon. However, back to your question. The wines are more like mountain wines, so higher in acidity, some tannin. Thinner in complexion, so the mouthfeel is not like a cherry bomb or, you know, a New World style wine. What I call mountain wine, higher in acidity, higher minerality, very linear, very focused. Those are the type of wines that I like. They go very well with hardier foods as well as lighter foods, like a Gamay from the mountains goes well with fish.
So you're seeing Gamay. What other varietals are very traditional?
Cornelin, Chasselas, Riesling we use, Gewürztraminer, yeah, stuff like that.
And besides just using mountain wine to describe the style, but are they also being grown in more of those upland areas that we mentioned kind of at the beginning?
They are being grown around Zurich, then of course in the Valais, which is a French-speaking part, and all the way up into the hills, one of the highest growing vineyards in Europe, Vesperterminen. They grow wine at like 3,000 feet.
Oh, wow. And like you said, much of it isn't exported. But more, I feel like, you know, 10 years ago, maybe not, but more and more today, hopefully?
Yes. Yeah, there are some good importers, but they get more expensive. And if you have to shell out $60 for a bottle of wine, then maybe Swiss wine is not the first thing that comes to mind. Mm. But they're good stuff out there.
And I also heard about something called Rivella. Can you tell me what that is?
When you make cheese, you have a byproduct, which is the whey, mm-hmm. and they make a drink. And I think up in Norway and Sweden, they have a similar drink that's made out of that stuff. So it's a whey-based drink that's carbonized and has a little sugar in it.
And it's something you drink?
You grow up drinking, and it's for breakfast.
And it's
lunch.
Not like caffeinated. It's
no,
not.
It's
just
all,
like a.
It's all natural. It has a little milky, little viscosity to it. But it's awesome stuff.
There's nothing really similar here.
No.
And speaking of which, are there Swiss products that people can find in the U.S. that they can kind of enjoy and get more familiar with?
Well,
besides like the wines.
Beyond the wine and the cheeses and the chocolate that they can pick up in any bodega, not really, no.
I mean, I heard about the chocolate. It's the highest consuming chocolate country in the world. Is that right?
Is that so? Yeah, okay. I believe that.
Are you a big chocolate eater?
I get my hands on good chocolate, yeah.
All right, before we take a quick break, I want to talk a little bit about the dining scene in Switzerland. As far as if you go to Zurich or some of the other big urban centers, what is the dining scene like?
Almost like here in New York. Mm. It's very diverse, but we're talking about Zurich, Bern, Geneva, so the major cities, mm-hmm. not out in the country. That's a complete different.
Are there a lot of experimental chefs? Is there anyone that you're really kind of interested in right now is doing things?
More and more. There's a guy in Entlebuch, sort of like in the middle of nowhere, and he's like the Markwerra of Switzerland. He goes and hunts and brings back roots and herbs and all sorts of stuff that he uses in his kitchen. It's quite a little avant-garde cuisine, and he probably needs customers to travel there from afar to stay afloat. Mm. Since the Swiss people, they like their schnitzel pommes frites.
So they like more traditional, you know, the Swiss population, as it were.
They're very traditional and conservative eaters, yeah.
Mm. Interesting.
Of course, then we have an old restaurant, the Hôtel de Ville in Crissier, that used to be a three-star Michelin from Freddy Girardet, that now was handed on off to a couple operators and chefs that are very successful. Most people, they don't go to three-star Michelin restaurants or experimental restaurants like Hotel Riesling.
Do you think that'll change? Do you think that people will start to come around?
Well, it's like in this country, right? You have to be in New York to... Well, that's actually not true, and I have to backstep that. There are more and more very interesting and great chefs. They don't have to be in New York anymore or in big centers, and they do awesome things in Charlotte, Portland, both Portlands, Wisconsin, perhaps. And they do awesome stuff. They started here in New York, and then they went back home.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I kind of want to pick up there when we come back from a break. We'll be learning more about Chef Ralph Coutel's restaurants in New York City. Stay with us.
You are listening to Laura Palmer by RecTech, and this is Native on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
All right, we are back. I'm Brianna Kurtz, and you're listening to Native on Heritage Radio. And today I'm talking to Ralph Coutel, executive chef and owner of Trestle on 10th and Rocket Pig in New York City. So we stopped before the break talking about the dining scene in Switzerland, which is where you got your start, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I want to kind of now jump over across the pond, as it were, and talk about how did you make your way to New York and to opening your restaurants?
Well, like many, it's an old story. You know, repeated all over. I came, got off the proverbial boat in 89, worked up in Connecticut, then New York City, at Union Square Cafe. In the meantime, got married, moved across the country to Seattle, then back because I missed the East Coast and it was just too darn far away from my family in Switzerland. Landed in Colorado, worked there for 1.5 years, and then back in New York. Worked at Zoe, which now closed. I think it was there about 12, 15 years. And with Stephen and Thali Lafredo at the time, I opened up Cena. We got 3 stars. New York Times, that lasted a year, and then we folded, and I was very discouraged and gave up cooking for 4 years. Worked in a wine store. Chelsea Weinwald was the manager there, a manager and ultimately the buyer. But I missed cooking, and so talked over with my wife, and we found Trestle on 10th. It took us a year to renovate, 1.5 years. It was pretty much a disaster, needed more funds. Mm-hmm. And then finally, 9 years ago, we opened up.
And then Rocket Pig came along.
Rocket Pig came along, yeah. We were offered a space right across the garden. We have a beautiful garden out back. 36 seats is, I think, one of the nicest gardens in the whole of the city. A small space was offered to us by the landlord, and I couldn't figure out what to do with it. Didn't want to say no, and then that one sandwich wonder sort of popped in my head, and we developed it, and then finally opened up. And it's a runaway success, and I hope I can open up more Rocket Pigs.
I hope
hopefully
so
this
too.
Year.
Well, tell me a little bit about how Trestle on 10th and Rocket Pig honor your Swiss roots and kind of Northern European heritage.
When we opened up Trestle on 10th, I wanted to focus on a Swiss influence and my heritage and upbringing. I called it Swiss Brasserie. And of course, I should ask myself, what is Swiss cuisine? Customers did that for me. They asked me what Swiss cuisine was, and I, of course, stumbled because there is no such thing as actual Swiss cuisine. We have the French people, we have the French-speaking Swiss, the German, very Germanic, the Graubünden, the Ticino. It's all like a hodgepodge. So over the last 8 years, I came to believe, or I become to believe, to break down all these borders. I don't look at Switzerland as one culinary center anymore. So that enables me to get deeper into my heritage. My mom was German, so we have herring on for brunch. I'm not afraid of curing our own salmon. There are not many salmons in Switzerland, as you can imagine. So I didn't want to confound myself just with the Swiss border, that red line that goes around Switzerland looking like a pig. That's actually pretty funny.
Ironically enough.
Yeah, it looks like a grazing pig if you look at it. Funny how it fits into this conversation.
And Rocket Pig has the one sandwich. So
one
why
sandwich.
That one sandwich? Because it could have been a million other sandwiches you could have come up with. So why this one?
We don't have much space to do much more. Mm-hmm. There are things in the pipeline where I want to expand the offering a little bit, but we are confined by the space. I figured, well, we could have done a turkey sandwich, could have done many things. Your question is very good. Pork is very close to my heart. I grew up with pork. Veal, beef was very seldom on a dinner plate, so pork is close. Game was close. I grew up with game. My father was a game warden. However, so working with pork and then trying to figure out, so if I were a Swiss pig, how would I want to end up on a sandwich? So brining, smoking part, which we do with many of our pig products, then led into the creation, I actually hate that word, but the development of that sandwich.
And you say that, you know, there is no Swiss cuisine, and but you do, here it is, I know I have to say it now, Metzgete,
yeah.
I did good.
Yeah,
and so tell me a little, which I look forward to every year when I get the email and it's like, okay, it's time. Always get my reservation. So tell me a little bit more about, again, we talked in the first half of the show, kind of what that is, but tell me about what that means at Trestle.
At Trestle, it means the same thing as it does in any Swiss country restaurant. It's you gather your family, your friends, you get together, and you go and have Metzgete in a restaurant that's advertised in the local newspaper. You consume, you eat the items that were just slaughtered yesterday, blood sausage, liver sausage, etc. It's for me, food is not just the center stage, or shouldn't be just the center stage of an experience going to a restaurant, unless you go to per se or, you know, a fancy restaurant. There you go for the food. For me, it's also to get together with your friends and turn off the TV, turn off your iPhone, and have a meaningful conversation with people that you care to have a conversation with. And food sets the stage, wine sets the stage, and it brings everybody together. That experience, for me, you cannot duplicate. It happens. And I hope that I can provide the setting at Trestle on 10th, and to some extent at Rocket Pig as well, to that getting together. We have a word in Swiss and in Germany, in German, Gemütlichkeit. It translates to something like chilling out, hanging out. But you also can have Gemütlichkeit just by yourself or with friends. And every time I see that happening at my restaurant, I think I did my job.
I think that's exactly what I feel when I go to Trestle. It has this like neighborhood community. It's not trying to be something that it's not. It's almost like an understated elegance. And I think that does go just not just from the food, but also the wine list, which is very qualitative, not quantitative. As you mentioned, the mountain wines, everything pairs well together. It's the perfect size. And I love all those things. And as much as I love Mezcata, it's a winter.
Yes, we only have it in January.
I wish you could have it not all year long, because then it would lose some of its, you know, glimmer. But I do wish I could have it all the time. But
you only slaughter pigs in the wintertime when it's cold, traditionally before the event of refrigeration. Mm-hmm. So everything had to be brine smoked, you know, very fast, and get out of the way before it would warm up again.
And you see all those things when you go to your restaurant, for sure. The brining, the smoking, all those techniques.
We use that all over the place.
How to utilize the pork. But with spring upon us now, I always see you at the farmer's market with your bike. Yep. And so what are you excited for right now? What can we expect on the menu for spring?
Anything that grows. I mean, we just went through a very hard winter. Nothing comes out of the ground. I go to the green market and I yell at the growers because nothing pops out yet. And we all walk home back very disappointed. But the asparagus coming on, if not local, I'm not too pragmatic about being a locavore. I want to have great products. And, you know, I don't care if they're from 200 miles away or from across the ocean, like asparagus from France, white, or from Holland. All the green stuff that we were yearning for, and we're pretty sick and tired to cook with rutabagas, apples, and onions.
And any other upcoming events, projects? I know your Easter menu.
Easter
is
coming up. Mm-hmm. Rams are not going to be around anymore, although I'm a little hesitant more and more so to use rams extensively. Mm-hmm. I figure that there's too many people stomping around in the woods of West Virginia and Jersey and just ripping out those rams, and they're not coming back. And so there's some people who are not conscientious about it. So I toned down my ram usage quite a bit, just to one or two dishes, and then we pickle a bunch and use them for the rest of the year. Easter is around the corner. It's going to be a week, 1.5 weeks from now. We have to try to slide into spring with the available products.
And you mentioned that you have some other ambitions, other projects. Do you want to talk about anything right now that is that you can tell us about? Or,
well, hopefully Rocket Pig.
More Rocket Pigs in the city or elsewhere?
In the city.
Okay.
In the city. Transportation is always a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, getting food from point A to point B. We're looking for a space, but as you know, space gotten very expensive in the city to a ridiculous point, and I hope we can find some hole in the wall somewhere to expand.
I hope so, too. Good luck with that. Well, and what about, when's the garden opening?
As soon as it gets warm out there. I know that's not a satisfying answer. So 65 is good to start sitting out at lunch. Mm-hmm. And then we are right smack in it in April, mid-April.
And that's another thing I love. You guys do breakfast, lunch, and dinner, which I really do think adds to that like neighborhood. Again, kind of you can come through on your way to work, or you can have a business lunch, or lunch with friends, come for a dinner.
The thought was that we should be here for our customers almost 24 hours a day. So every time they think of Trestle on 10th, we are there. But I think of ourselves not just as a neighborhood restaurant anymore. I think we grew out of that, where people do come down to 10th Avenue and 24th Street to come and visit us, although there's not much happening over there except the galleries and the High Line. There's no retail. Not many other things to come and visit for, but we've expanded our clientele quite a bit.
I agree. I mean, I don't live in the neighborhood, but I do try to make a point of it to, like, I'm going to go down to, you know, 24th and 10th, and I'm going to, you know, go grab a sandwich, and I'm going to go to the High Line, or I'm going to catch an early dinner with friends. And I love that Trestle's always there for that.
Yep.
So,
Where
can people find out more about you, more about the restaurants?
On our website, trestleon10th.com, Twitter, Facebook. Yeah.
All of the above.
All right. Not updated religiously. I'm not really a Twitterer. But there are some people who are capable of seeing every minute of their breathing moment something about themselves, and that's just not quite me.
Well, I'm sure there's plenty of people who are willing to help you out with that. You know, take the pictures of the beautiful food coming out of the kitchen.
We have great people and staff, and everybody chips in.
All right. Well, we are about out of time. Ralph, thank you so much for joining us on Heritage today.
Brianna, thank you for having me. It was great fun, and I hope we can do it again.
And if you find yourself hungry in New York, be sure to check out Trestle on 10th at 242 10th Avenue and Rocket Pig right around the corner at 463 West 24th Street. That's all for Native today. Next week, I will be joined by members from the team at Buna Cafe to learn more about Ethiopian cuisine and culture. Be sure to tune in live right here every Thursday morning at 11 a.m.
The theme song for Native is provided by Evan Hashi.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.